All right, everybody, I know the clock is still ticking down, but as is usually our custom, we're going to start a little early. And first of all, we'll speak about the future. As you can tell, we are winding down there. This is the last minor prophet, and we are only going to spend this week and next week. Philip's going to finish up for me next week on Malachi. And then we have to wait 400 years before the New Testament arrives. So, I've been thinking, the message of the prophets, as we've been going through, on the message of God's faithfulness, His redemption, the response that He expected His people to have, and the reminders of how this was supposed to work and the consequences when it doesn't, a wonderful segue into what I'd like us to move into, and that is the book of Romans. The book of Romans is a tough nut to crack. But if you think about it, the way it's arranged, because it chronologically is not the earliest letter written, but Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Acts, Romans, why is it placed in the beginning? Rest of the letters. And perhaps it's because it's so foundational. So as Paul writes to the Romans, never met them before, but he wants them to know how this whole thing works. We too need to know how this works. As we go through, we're going to see that our perspective of Romans as we have come through history is not perhaps quite the same perspective as the people listening to it for the first time. The words that we use, especially like grace, are different than the way that they used it. You know, when we think of the word grace today, it's a religious term, right? We talk about grace at home all the time. No, but they did. That was their everyday word that they used, how to become close with one another, and the importance of relationships. So before we get into the book, in a couple weeks, we're going to spend at least two or three class periods on this concept of grace as they understood it in the first century. And then we'll get into chapter 1. I'll also have a series of tougher questions that I'm going to ask for volunteers to study and be ready to give kind of a three-sentence explanation of what they've discovered. There'll be maybe seven or eight of those. And so you'll have maybe, I don't know, 10 or 12 weeks to prepare for those. And I'll read it, or if you want to read it from where you're sitting, that's fine too. But some of the things in Romans are going to be difficult to understand. But I think as we go through and we explain some of the terms, this book that is very dense, and when Paul writes his arguments, they are thick and tough and beautiful. And they explain God's redemption so beautifully. If you're not careful, like many people today, take a couple verses and get way off about how we use faith and grace. All right, back to Malachi. Let us sing the minor prophets, minor prophets, minor prophets. Let us sing the minor prophets. There's 12 of them all. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Acts, and the letter to the Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Galatians and Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, 1st and 2nd Timothy, Titus and Philemon, Hebrews, James, 1st and 2nd Peter,
Scripture, 1st and 2nd and 3rd John, and Revelation.
Awesome. Great job. All right, Malachi. What time are we talking about? When I stand over in this corner, what am I representing? Creation, sometime, right? 3,000 years before Jesus, who was living, he had a big boat. Noah. Right. The next 1,000-year marker, 2,000 years before Jesus, who's living now? Abraham, right. In your mind, picture the altar with Isaac on it. The next 1,000 years before Jesus, picture a six-sided star. Who's this? David. Very good. And then at zero, picture a cross or a star again. Who are we talking about? Jesus, right. 1,000 years later, anybody want to, okay, William the Conqueror. All right. Lots of things going on, but that's how long we're talking about. As far as David is before Jesus, we're talking about a whole 1,000 years. Of course, now, we can't get past the wall here, but we live another 1,000 years after that. So what's our temporal opposite here? If we're 2,000 years after Jesus, who lived 2,000 years before Jesus? The altar? Abraham. Yeah, think about it that time. We're talking about a major stone. Malachi, where does he fit in? Okay. So, after David and Solomon, the kingdom splits into the northern and southern kingdom. The northern kingdom is taken into captivity by Assyria. The southern kingdom, Judea, lasts a little bit longer. And then they're also taken into captivity, this time by the Babylonians. Then they're all in captivity for 70 years. And then when the Persians take over, they allow them to start coming back. And they come back in three waves. That first wave was with Zerubbabel, and who was the high priest that we've been talking about, his contemporary? Joshua, right, the son of Jehoshaphat. And we talked about that in Zechariah. When the temple is being built and everything. Now we're talking about 100 years later, which is now 400 and something B.C. So we're right on the edge here, right on the cusp of 400 years of silence before Jesus bursts onto the scene. John the Baptist preceding him. Malachi is the very last book written in the canon as it's compiled in the Old Testament. And for them, this was the end of the story as far as God speaking to them directly about this relationship between God and the Israelites. Where did it begin? Relationship with the Israelites. Sorry? Abraham, right. Genesis chapter 12, sorry. 1,000 years. All right? So, and it was more formalized when? Our class this morning, where are we looking at? Moses, Exodus, right. All right. So they've been, depending on where you put Moses, because I think Egyptian chronology is messed up somewhat. But if you talk about that 1,500 years, we're talking Moses splitting the difference between Abraham and David. We're now talking about 1,000 years that the children of Israel have been, to different degrees, following through with the old law, all the sacrifices, all the ways of worshiping God, all the ways of messing up, being oppressed, being delivered, coming back to God over and over again. Whether you're talking about the cycle of judges from the beginning or kings that were evil, and then one good king would come along and try to restore things like Hezekiah. But those days are gone now. Now we're on the other side of the exile, and these priests and the leaders, the lineage of David that has continued despite them not wearing a crown, still, now that they've come back for the last 100 years, they've instituted, now that they have the temple, putting all those sacrifices back together, remembering the feasts. So what happens over the course of 100 years of doing that, do you think? In Zechariah's time, there was great celebration. Haggai, and they couldn't decide whether they were shouting because they were excited or because they were crying so much. Okay. How many generations in 100 years? Several, right? So Zerubbabel and Joshua are no longer in control. In the meantime, we've had people come back the second and third return from Persia, back into, you know, you have Ezra's return, and then you have Nehemiah's return. Now they're in the midst of building the walls that are broken down. You have new people along the scene who are not sure what's going on. You also have time that has passed. Flow of, yes, we're back doing this. That generation. You remember in Judges how it described what happened after Joshua died and all the elders that lived with him during that conquest died. There arose a generation. Now we're talking 100 years. These next generations still do know the Lord. They haven't gone back into idolatry. But there's something wrong with their worship. Something majorly wrong with the way they're serving God. And so Malachi is being sent to tell them, hey, this is broken and we need to fix it. If we don't fix it, there are going to be consequences. In fact, we are currently in a state God great. In Revelation, their church that had been there a long time, that was doing a lot of things the right way, Revelation chapter 2, a large church, a church that had been there, they had elders, stood up to false doctrine, but they had lost their first love. These people in Malachi had obviously lost their first love. They were no longer doing it primarily in response to their gratitude for God. They were doing it selfishly, going through the motions in order to help themselves. Here's Malachi in a overview. That's sort of what we're going to be looking at. Don't bother trying to read everything. We'll blow everything up here. So this is a recount of what we just talked about. 100 years after their return from exile, there's still poverty going on, injustice, the very things that the prophets before reminded them that this is the foundation. If you want the Messiah to return, your generation needs to be about faithfulness and justice. And that was not going on. So, God, through Malachi, is going to describe His anger, discontent, frustration with the children of Israel through some questions, some statements. And so if you look through, you're going to find this cycle, this series, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, of statements that Malachi is going to make on God's behalf, And then as if the people respond, that doesn't make sense to us. We're doing what you said for us to do. God returns with a fuller explanation. He says, no, you're not. So we're going to hear these series of questions over and over again as we go through. So if you'll grab your Bible, if you haven't already, turn it to Malachi. Malachi chapter 1. All right, the first dispute. I'm going to read the first 5 verses. Betty, do you have that? You want to read that out loud for us? All right. Mona, do you have that? Uh-huh. That makes sense to you? They ask the question, or God initially says the question, about love. I love you. What was their response? We're in poverty here. Does this look like you love us, God? You're all powerful, but we're struggling here, scratching it out, trying to build this wall with enemies on every side. What's God's response to that objection? Right, with this long description that to our ears don't make sense, right? Or at least there's some thorny issues revolving around this question. I chose you. When two parents adopt a child, and there's difficulties later on in the relationship, and that child says, you don't love me. What might those parents appeal to? This was purposeful, right? Out of all the orphans out there, you chose. And let me describe all the things that we've done for you that we haven't done for everybody else. Diapers, etc. All the way through. What is that type of description meant to do? Right, remind them so that there's a well of gratitude that rises up and says, wow, if it weren't for that love, this is where we'd be. Because what has God done for Jacob that he didn't do for Esau's descendants? Right, because he loved them, he was merciful to them and didn't give them what they deserved like he did what they deserved. And at this time, in Malachi's time, the Edomites been pushed out of their homeland. They were no longer living there. They were scattered. Yeah, they barely existed on the Idumeans, who were the descendants of them. But they could clearly see during Malachi's time, God brought you guys back out of exile. not doing that. Difference? What might be an application in this question for us today? One of the things that Romans points out is that whether you were a Jew or whether you were a Gentile, a member of all the nations around you, God treated you fairly. We're all guilty, right? Whether with the law or outside of the law. Those that were not, God exonerated them. We're out there. When we have a relationship with God, we have this beautiful opportunity link to Him as we would our Father. What do you think the chances are when I was a teenager getting myself in trouble, going to my dad and asking for help if he was a good dad, versus some stranger dad out there asking for help? He knows me, he's invested in me already, and he's willing, because he wants that continuing relationship with me, to help bail me out. Hold me responsible because he wants me to change. But he's willing to deliver me. That's the message here with Malachi. That's the message with us today. We can go to the throne with every confidence because of that relationship we have with God. People out in the world, do they have that confidence? When they're in their foxhole and they realize things are tight, looking at death in the face, and they say, God save me, and they suddenly, do they have every confidence? They've chosen not to have that relationship. So, as we go through these questions, let's think of it for ourselves as well. All right. That is not. Well, let's look at number 2. Mess that up. Chapter 6. This is a longer one. It's going to go through chapter 2 and verse 9. Chapter 1 and verse 6 through chapter 2 and verse 9. Thank you so much. What's God's statement to them? What have they done to annoy God? What have they done? What's this regarding? What element of their life? All right, the way in which they're worshiping, their sacrifices. What's the purpose of sacrifices to begin with? Okay, there were several different types, right? One were based because I've sinned and I want to restore my relationship with you, God, and you said that you're willing for me to kill this innocent animal for it to bear my sin. There were other sacrifices that were done, not because I was guilty, but because of my gratitude for my relationship with God, and I wanted to honor Him by physically showing Him the sacrifice. There were many of those times. There were other sacrifices that were done for special occasions. Different feasts, or seasons of the year, or every time the moon. But what was the problem here? Is there an application for us today? Right. Did God have a reason to be annoyed at this? To the point of saying what? I wish... well, I wish that somebody would close the stinking doors to the temple so that you all could not come in, because the way you are worshiping is defiling this relationship. It's not restoring it. It's making it worse than what it was. How was it making it worse? Okay, their attitude about it stank. But physically, how did they show that stinkiness of attitude? Weren't. What were they told to do? Sacrifice. The first fruits is what they were to sacrifice. And when it came to the animals, what type of animals were these supposed to be? Right. Ones that were not messed up. But what were they doing? They're stealing somebody else's sheep that honor this idea of sacrifice. Well, it's sacrifice for them, right? Don't worry. We're redistributing your wealth. All right. Through theft? What other ways? The lame and the sick. Right. That's not doing me any good. Birds with one stone. Get rid of this one, and we keep the good ones because they're profitable for us. But what did that demonstrate to God? God was the one who was blessing them to begin with, right? Sitting in His face. And so in response, what does God ask them to do? To try to jar their understanding of why this is so inappropriate. Right. Your own governors, where are they on the... below God, right? But they understood if they brought that to the governor, what the governor's response would be. Exactly, and for just cause. And recognize that. Fine. So how does that apply to us today? Did you bring your favorite sheep this morning? Did you bring a stolen lamb today? What might that look like today? Okay, I was kind of bored. Last minute, you know, if I wake up, I'll go. If I don't, then I'll catch the next time. All right, that's definitely a way. What else? Okay, while you're here, are you here? Okay. And how do we... There you go. How do we teach our children that importance? No, I meant right while we're here. Livy's right here, sitting here. Kaylin's sitting right over there. How do we teach our children that this is important to us while we're here? Okay, showing them. Very good. What if they're doing their own little thing? I'm not talking babies here. But as they grow and in knowledge and in understanding things, we expect them, just like they're doing right now, to sit and pay attention rather than... Or they've got their own little book that they're reading. Oh, I'm quiet. I'm not disturbing anybody. But are they? That's just a side part. More importantly, are they seeing that in us? Okay. Very good. And is it just about preparing for worship? Living it every day. Because that is really, if we're talking about what our children notice in us. Michael's not here. That was one of the very real things that he brought in his understanding. This was the first time, from his perspective, that he had people saying the right things, but throughout the week, actually... I'll take this moment right now. I forgot this morning. Y'all are here. Michael is seeing that in the way you were treating him, the way some of you have already truly sacrificed for him. Because everything he owns is in two tubs, plastic totes. Right. But he's seeing that demonstrated, and guess what? He's already making that leap to say, what I'm being blessed with by the brethren here, I'm looking for ways to bless other people. That is what people during Malachi's day had completely missed. That the idea of what God has given us and Him asking us in return to respond with sacrifice and love towards one another, how this cycle works. That's what we're going to talk about in Romans 2. Because what was true then is even more true now. So the next question, starting in chapter 2. Before we get there, he starts off by talking to Israelites in general. But who does he start focusing his message on, especially in the area of worship? What was the priest's job? All right. As opposed to the prophets, the priest's job were not only to teach what the law said, but to administer it, right? All these sacrifices, all the things that the temple worship had to have going on at the same time, whether it be singing, whether it be taking care of the utensils, whether it be all kinds of stuff. Day. All of us. Oil. Who has this responsibility? But the priests at this time, because there was no king, had the additional reason, additional function in many ways, that they also became the de facto leaders that people looked to for their spiritual guidance. And so the Malachi starts describing them as what? What role? He holds a staff. What was wrong with these shepherds? All right, they were not leading the way God wanted them to do. What kind of things were they doing as these shepherds? Okay. They were not holding people to account for the way in which they were. Could a priest realize that this before they killed it, that it was missing eyes, had gangrene? Yeah, of course. They were the gatekeepers to that holiness. We are that for one another. We're kind, we're gentle, but we are gatekeepers. We're to encourage, but also to admonish one another. How about the corruption? You were the one who is the leader. What is the challenge? What does authority do? As the vernacular saying, what does power do? Corrupts. I'm going to take it further. All right, so we're familiar with that type of concept here. But as the shepherds of that time, the leaders, they had become not unlike Eli's sons that were saying, in this case, it's good to be a shepherd. Come on over here. Well, if you give me something on the side here, I'll let your lame sheep. How do we curb that tendency today as priests? We're in the role of shepherds especially. Okay. They were being arbitrary, impartial. They were saying, you're my friend, you're not my friend. I'll let this slide. No. And in countries, we see that regularly today, and it's still somewhat scandalous in our own country when it happens now, but it's becoming less so. Well, in some countries, it's become the way of life. That's how business is. That's how it had become here. That's just how business is. How did God see that? Unacceptable, right? When Jesus came along, when he went into the temple, what was his reaction? He drove them out of the temple. That's the message of Malachi here. I wish somebody would shut the doors. I'd rather nobody worship me than have you worship me this way. The way we handle our lives, the way we handle our relationships with each other, the way we love one another, all of this, different facets.
We read about them for a few of these things they were doing wrong. Not only were they doing it wrong, they were complaining about the burden. And then when they read my how tiresome it is, and this is thing is, and I think about myself sometimes, and I'm like, do I use that excuse? You know, if I'm putting in 20-50 hours a week and there's some good I should be doing, I might have my thoughts.
Talking to Bibby this morning. He's been worried that he's going to lose his job. Round of cutoffs. Each round that he actually makes, guess who gets to do the job of the people who were let go? He's to the point now where he's working 60, 70 hours a week now. Hey, that's a burden, isn't it? Does that affect his time for his family and for everything else? Is that an opportunity for us to help? But as Michael talked about here, we see this in our children as an easy example because I was one. I obeyed my parents pretty good, but I didn't. Too often I whined about it. Too often I moped around, did it slowly, didn't do it enthusiastically, influenced my brothers badly. That feeling like it was a burden. What did I miss? What had I missed along that line? Okay, the joy, but what is the joy in? Joy is in the relationship that makes that whole dynamic possible. I have somebody that's actually providing for me that I could not do for myself. And so for me to turn around and say, this is a burden, this is evidence what this relationship is about. And so as we might show our children the consequences of what life looks like without the benefits, oh, you don't want to do your chores? Okay. How about if Mom and I don't do what we're bringing to this relationship? What does this life look like for you? Or some kid that says, I'm going to run away. And at least in my generation, parents' generation, say, let me help you. Or I'm going to call child services. Here's the number. Because usually that child realized, oh, wow. Yeah, let me think about this for a moment. Mona's mom tells the story of his younger brother packing up, you know, the cliche of the handkerchief full of food on the stick and walking down the road. I'm leaving. He didn't get very far before he realized what he was leaving behind. And that's why this congregation is so important in showing God's love. Because we have people in our midst who at times feel like, I'm walking down the road. This is too much. And if they get to the end of the driveway and don't realize, wow, I'm walking away from a lot more than I thought about, guess where they're headed? Going. So the idea of God's way of doing things as a family here, we're not investing in each other right now. When people have this attitude that it's too burdensome for me, and we try to jog their understanding as their brothers and sisters in Christ, the way God asks us to, the way we announced this morning, we haven't invested in them, no problem for them to keep walking. Sad. But the people during Malachi's time, from long history, God's faithfulness. And the difference between them and, for example, the Edomites. Them and their previous generations who were in exile. We're all holding to the promise one day, one day. Time's up. Talk about chapter 3 for next time. But let's see the appeal in this way that Malachi is trying to ask them to look at themselves again. To look at our own lives to see, am I really living and responding to God's mercy and grace the way He deserves it? Am I giving Him the leftovers? Am I giving Him the stuff I've sort of taken? What's the bad thing about us bringing the stolen stuff to God? Or the lame stuff. It's all His to begin with, right? Have a short. Father, You are so good to us. Thank You for Your mercy, Your long-suffering for us. We get it wrong so often. Help us to help each other, turning to You, turning to the attitudes that show that we do appreciate what You've done for us. Love You. Want to love one another. Sacrifice is real. Help us to do this every day, not just while we're here. Order our lives that it's no longer a burden, but the very joy for which we live today.